This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Storytellers Sheila K. Adams and Lloyd Arneach both grew up in families that thrived on stories. Lloyd was raised on a Cherokee reservation in western North Carolina. Sheila comes from just up the road in Madison County, where she learned ballads from seven generations of Scots-Irish ancestors. Both will perform at the National Folk Festival in Greensboro next month, and they join us from our partner station WCQS in Asheville. Lloyd and Sheila, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. This is great.
As I said, both of you come from families of storytellers. Sheila, let's start with you. What did you learn? Tell us about learning stories, where and when you first started hearing some of those stories.
Well, it was really interesting, Frank, because I grew up in a family where I had a bunch of aunts and uncles. There were 13 children in my father's family and 5 children in my mother's family. And I had 72 first cousins at one time when I was a kid growing up, and we would all get together at family reunions, and it was really hard for the kids to get a word in edgewise because all the brothers and sisters were too busy talking. But they told some family stories. That's the kind of stories that I continue to tell, because they would have a conversation. They didn't know they were storytelling. They just thought they were talking. So that's how I grew up in the family of storytellers. There were so many of them, and they all had a story to tell.
It's interesting to think of the effect of those stories, because with all that kin running around, it's hard to keep track of them all. Everybody's got their own personalities and traits, and yet that's kind of what stories do, right? They can hold everybody together as a family unit, but also maintain the uniqueness of each individual, I think. Am I right about that?
That's right. You're exactly right. That's what happened in my family. The brothers might have had, my father had, out of those 13 children, there were 11 boys. So my father had 10 brothers and 2 sisters. And so out of that, they all had a different take on the story, but it stayed pretty much the same. And they talked a lot about their grandmother and great-grandmother and grandfather. And so I just kind of soaked up the stories like a sponge as I was coming along growing up.
Lloyd, tell us about your experience with stories.
I had 2 great uncles who were wonderful storytellers. And when we had a family gathering, Uncle George would tell a story, Uncle Dave would tell a story. And it was like a tennis match going back and forth between them. And without realizing it, I was learning the old stories of our people. And then other elders shared stories with me, then people from other tribes, and then stories would just happen. And I would remember what occurred. So when I tell stories, I have a wide range of the traditional stories. We call them the old stories. And other people say, do you know any legends of your people? And I first started out, I had to stop and think, these aren't legends. These are the old stories. Oh, yes, they're the one and the same. So,
Well, how many of them are, you know, what was the stories that we might consider somewhat supernatural and others that are rooted in real ancestral history, or do you not make that distinction?
I don't make that distinction. There are a lot, because they talk about stories of the animal, and they say before man appeared, the animals were doing this, and they did this, and this is how they got the characteristic. So that, I guess you would fall into the classification of supernatural. If there are no humans, who knew what the animals were doing? And on the other hand, you have those of people working with the animals. And again, that would fit in the category of supernatural. And then you have those that talk about the natural occurrences, how we got the balls, the mountain balls, how those appeared, different things like that.
And what about stories about your family? I mean, stories that are kind of genealogical, you know, what uncles and cousins and great-grandfathers did. Was that also part of the kind of storytelling experience?
Yes. My grandmother was, she married an Englishman. So I have, as one of my relatives said, a very long face, and I classify that as the English side of the family showing itself. And so there's stories of how Grandma and Grandpa met. They actually met in Montana at a rodeo. So it's a long way from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. My grandmother also became one of the beloved women of the tribe. I have an uncle who graduated from Dartmouth, an aunt who was an associate editor with Time Life Books in New York. And from all of these relatives came different types of stories. And as Sheila said, They were just telling them. They didn't realize they were storytellers. They were just sharing what had happened. And it was wonderful listening to all these different experiences.
Well, Sheila, you talk also and sing ballads, which is the Scots-Irish side of the family coming through. What makes a ballad? What is a ballad?
A ballad is a song that tells a story, and some of them tell big, long stories, Frank. I know one that's called Lord Bateman that's got 96 verses. This fellow goes on a crusade in Aswani. He goes all around the world. A couple of different times, but I'm not going to do that one today. I'm going to do a shorter ballad today, but a ballad is a song that tells a story.
Well, will you do that for us now?
I'll be glad to. I'm going to do one that's called Young Hunting, and you'll see it's got a great story to tell in it, and when I was growing up, the more bloody and gory the songs were, the more I wanted to learn them, so here's Young Hunting. Come in, my old true love, and spend this night with me, for I've got a bed, it's a very fine bed, and I'll give it up for thee, I'll give it up for thee. Oh, I can't come in, or I'm not coming in, to spend this night with thee, for I've got a wife in the old Scotland. This night she waits for me, this night she waits for me. It she pulled out her little penknife, it had been both keen and sharp, and she stepped it up to her old true love, and she stabbed him in his heart, and she stabbed him in his heart. Woe be, Lady Margaret, he cried. Woe be, it's unto thee, for there weren't no wife in the old Scotland that I loved any better than thee, that I loved any better than thee. Lay there, my own true love, 1 hour, two, or three, and I will send for a doctor near to save the life of thee, to save the life of thee. Oh, it's I can't live, nor I won't live, from the wound you've given me. No doctor's hand, just God's own hand, could save my life for me, could save my life for me. It she cried out to a servant girl, this thing I'll promise thee, if you'll help me on this dark night, my gown I'll give to thee, my gown I'll give to thee. It she took a hold of his long yeller hair, and the other took up his feet, and they throwed him into the old dry well, which was so cold and deep, which was so cold and deep. Lay there, my own false love, till the flesh rots off in your frame, and the little old wife in the old Scotland shall mourn for your return, shall mourn for your return.
Sheila K. Adams performing the song Young Hunting. She's going to be singing ballads throughout the National Folk Festival in Greensboro. That festival runs from September 11th to the 13th. You can get details at our website, stateofthings.org. Those ballads just never end well, do they?
They very seldom do.
Sad song. But, you know, it's interesting because you've talked about this. Some of these go back to the Norman Conquest. I mean, in a lot of ways, they carry forward these songs, even newer songs and songs that were made in the mountains. Some of the grief and hardship that goes with the violence that is in all of our histories one way or another, I guess. Is that right?
That's exactly true. And, you know, if you think about it, what do we hear on you know, what do we watch on TV? You know, it's this sensationalized kind of stuff like they were singing about in 1066 when the Normans invaded the Saxons.
Lloyd, you know, we talked about the songs and stories that are in traditions for a long time. You tell Native American stories. How are they distinct, or are they, from other kinds of stories that we might hear?
Well, it's normally in the delivery because among the Cherokee, when a child misbehaved, an elder would take the child aside and share a story, and then that story is a lesson about how they should have behaved. There were also different levels of comprehension in that story. It may be used with a child at a very young age, and then as the child's comprehension grew, as say as a teenager, the same story may be used to tell a different lesson. And then it would also be used just for entertainment in the evenings when they were all just sharing stories. So there were multiple uses of the same story.
You tell stories in Native American traditions and outside of the Cherokee tradition, right? You tell stories of other groups as well?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm not a traditional storyteller. Among the Cherokee, the traditional storyteller waited until the harvest was brought in and before the seeds were planted in the ground. That was when you told the stories, because they felt if you started telling stories after the seeds were put in the ground in the spring, the plant would grow up. It would start listening to the stories and forget to grow. And when it came harvest time, there would be nothing to harvest, and you would starve. So,
well, this gets to some other questions about protocols around storytelling, particularly with Native American stories. There have been some complaints that others are appropriating that, or that they should only not only be told in their right time, but only be told by Native storytellers and only from that tradition. I mean, how do you feel about some of those critiques?
For me, I feel stories are to be shared, and I know of families that had a number of stories they told, but only in a family setting. And when that person who had been telling that story passed away, the others knew the story, but they wouldn't tell it. And we lost so many stories that way. I feel there are people out there who share our stories, and I'll be honest with you. I have met people who are not Native American, don't have a drop of Native American blood, but they're more Native American in spirit than most of the Native Americans I have come across. They honor our culture, our traditions, the way we do things. And you know, it's a sad commentary on how our culture has basically deteriorated in that regard. And I think right now, of those who are Native American who are sharing stories and those who know them and are sharing Native American stories, so I'm of the mind that the stories are to be shared as long as they pay proper respect to the story. And not all stories require that. You know, it may just be a simple little story, but there's nothing very spiritual about the story. It's just in the telling of the story. And myself, I feel that I never take myself very seriously, but I do take the story seriously, and there's a difference there.
Would you tell a story for us now?
Certainly. Long ago, the Cherokee had one tobacco plant, and they used tobacco for healing. Now, there was an elderly lady of our people who had taken sick. The medicine man went to see her, and after he examined her, he thought, I can heal her with one leaf from the tobacco plant. So he asked a warrior to go in the forest and bring back a leaf from the tobacco plant. The warrior went into the forest, and he got to where the tobacco plant was. All he found was a great big hole in the ground. He looked on the dirt around the hole, and there he saw the tracks of geese. Now, in those days, geese were fierce warriors, and nobody wanted to fight with them unless they had to. Well, the warrior went back and told the mess men what he'd found. And the medicine man called in the warriors. He called in the wise men. He called in the animals. He told them about the old woman being sick and that he could heal her with one leaf from the tobacco plant. But the geese had dug up the plant and taken their camp far in the south. And he asked for someone to go bring back a leaf. The deer said he would go. He traveled to the south. He was very fast. It wasn't long before he could hear the geese because there's noises then as they are today. He eased to the bushes. He saw this large clearing in the forest. The geese were in a circle all around the clearing. They had planted the tobacco out in the middle, and they were guarding it. The deer were running out. He leaped over the geese and went charging out toward the tobacco plant. Geese gave the alarm call. Other geese came flying in from everywhere. They knocked the deer to the ground, and they killed the deer. And the medicine man knew when the deer had passed. And he called the men and the animals together again and told them, deer is not coming back. And they all knew what this meant. He asked for someone else to go. And this time, Bear said he would go. Well, Bear traveled to the south. He was very slow, and it took him longer. But finally, he could hear the geese. He looked out. He saw the circle of geese and a tobacco plant. He went charging out, knocked the geese aside, went running out towards the tobacco plant. And again, geese gave the alarm call. The geese came flying in from everywhere. They knocked the bear to the ground. And they killed the bear. And the medicine man knew when the bear had passed. And he called the men and the animals together again and told them, bear is not coming back. And he asked for someone else to go. This time, everybody was quiet. The deer, as fast and as agile as he was, had been killed. Bear, as big and as formidable as he was, had been killed. Then the little hummingbird flew up on the medicine man's finger, and he said, I will go. Everybody looked at the hummingbird. They were laughing. He said, you, what can you do? And the hummingbird said, I will try. Does anybody else want to go? Everybody was quiet. The hummingbird said, then I will go. He flew to the south. He was very fast. It wasn't long before he could hear the geese. He flew up to a branch of the tree. He looked down on the geese and the tobacco plant, darted over the heads of the geese, landed on the tobacco plant, snipped off a leaf and some seeds, held them in his beak, darted back over the heads of the geese. Again, he perched on the tree. He looked down to see if the geese had seen him. They were so busy talking, they hadn't even noticed. The hummingbird flew north to the land of the Cherokee. He went to the medicine man, gave him the leaf and the seeds. The medicine man called his warriors and told them, go plant this throughout our land so we will never want for our medicine again. Then he took the leaf. He crumbled it up. He lit it, and he blew the smoke across the old woman, and she was healed. And she lived for many more years, sharing her knowledge with her people. Now, today, we talk about the lesson of the hummingbird. The hummingbird teaches us this shell that we all live in is not important. The hummingbird teaches us what is important is what is in the heart. And that is the story of the hummingbird.
Lloyd Arneach, a Cherokee storyteller, going to be sharing stories as part of the National Folk Festival in Greensboro. That gets underway Sunday the 13th, and it continues for a couple more days. And he joins us today on The State of Things. When did you first hear that story? Do you remember, Lloyd?
Wow. I must have been 5 or 6 years old when I first heard my uncle share that.
Yeah. Sheila, tell us where you think the state of storytelling is today. We have festivals, but do you think storytelling is the same, has the same impact and is used in the same way? It's kind of not the same, I guess, as when you grew up just listening to them at family events, or do they still have that impact?
Well, I think storytelling is the one way that we're going to kind of save things, as far as I'm concerned. People like Lloyd and myself that go around and tell stories, especially, you know, at the National Storytelling Festival and at other storytelling gatherings. And there's quite a few of them out across the country. Because as we become more of a technology-based society, I think the spoken word becomes more and more important. And I think that it's absolutely necessary for folks like me and Lloyd to keep telling stories and telling them to our own family, to our own children, to our own relatives, and especially to our grandchildren. I've got soon to have 4 grandchildren. I've got 3 right now with 1 on the way. And they know all the stories about their people back as far as I was told. And they love to hear me tell the stories. They beg for them every time they come spend the night at my house.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Sheila K. Adams is a ballad singer and folk and a storyteller. She joined us from member station WCQS. And Lloyd Arneach is a storyteller who joined us on the phone. They are both going to be performing at the National Folk Festival in Greensboro Friday, September 11th through the 13th of September. You can find out more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Southern culture on the skids. I'm Frank Stachel. Please stay tuned.